The Holy Gospel according to St. Mark, the 8th chapter. Then Jesus asked the disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." And he ordered them not to tell anyone about him. Then Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If anyone to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The Gospel of the Lord. The Messiah has a very specific job description. The job of the Messiah is to lead the people of Israel out of bondage by a show of strength, win the victory over the transgressors, and drive the transgressors and the oppressors out of Israel. When Peter proclaims that Jesus is the Messiah, this is exactly what he has in mind. So you can imagine why Peter would react so harshly when Jesus starts to talk about him being arrested and suffering and to be put to death. Jesus is telling Peter and the disciples what his path is going to be. It's the path of suffering, rejection, and death. The path that leads to the risen life. But Peter doesn't hear that last part. He only hears the first thing, suffering, rejection, and death. And immediately he begins to think, what kind of a Messiah could this be? He can't possibly be that. He's the Messiah. By definition, he has to have strength. He has to show himself to have an arm that can reach out and get rid of, in this case, the Romans, the empire. To anything less is defeat. And Peter, like you and me probably, would do just about anything to stop from having to be associated with defeat and the shame that goes with it. Failure is not an option for Peter. He will do anything. He will deny Jesus and his words about suffering and death, and perhaps we would also do anything to avoid his call, Jesus' call to the church, to be in solidarity with those who have been put to shame in our culture and in our society. But this is Jesus, and these are his words and his deeds. Jesus goes, he is all in with solidarity for those who are going to be shamed in our culture. Death on the cross is the most public and the most publicly humiliating thing that the Romans could possibly cook up. It is meant to give notice that if you cross the empire, this is what happens to you. Avoid this humiliation, suffering at all costs. The cross therefore puts Jesus in company with everybody who has ever been crucified, everyone who has ever been on death row, everyone who has ever lived in the streets or lived in poverty, anyone who has no power or voice. He is in solidarity with everyone who has been made to feel ugly, cast out, and despised. He is in solidarity, in short, with anyone who has suffered in such a way that people look at them and recoil at the sight. That's what the cross is. Anyone like Peter would recoil even at the idea that the Messiah, his friend, would suffer such a thing. And yet that is what Jesus reacts against. He says, "Get behind me, Satan." And he makes it clear that his way, the way of suffering, is exactly how he will go. And it is the way that he is calling us to follow. To be with those who are put to shame. You will notice that elsewhere Jesus, when he says, "I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." You'll notice that each one of those things is essentially someone who is cast out, someone who is alone, someone who would be ashamed, poor, naked, in prison, sick. And those are the people that Jesus says, "If you do it to the least of these, you do it to me. I am with them. I am them." And yet we continue to try to separate ourselves from those who are shamed. In the movie Hidden Figures, the story of African American women doing science and math in the NASA, in the early NASA programs, there's a scene in which a white woman supervisor enters the colored-only cafeteria to publicly tell one of the African American women who was applying to NASA to become an engineer, to tell her that NASA does not send women into the engineering programs. And she ends this public shaming by saying this: "You people should just be grateful that you have a job at all. You people." That's 1961 when that happened. But it isn't just the times. Though I am sorry to say it, I will say it, that 60 years later, you can still hear that same kind of thing. Every once in a while, it just sneaks out. You work at the food bank, and you do this good work of feeding people, giving them food, especially in these difficult times. And when somebody, a client, either offers a complaint or is maybe looks like they might be trying to pick up too many boxes of food, you will hear this: "Those people should just be grateful for what they're getting." Or, "Those people are trying to take advantage of our generosity." Those people. This is the way to reassure us that we are not like them. That the shame that we and society have put upon them does not come rebounding back on us, because we are, after all, in close proximity to them at the food bank. So once in a while, in order to preserve our own status of honor against their shame, we have to separate ourselves. We have to distinguish between us and them, those people. It happens. It's not even conscious, but it happens. Because we will do just about anything to avoid shame. But listen. Peter heard that Jesus was going to undergo great suffering, to be rejected, and to be killed. But what he didn't seem to hear was the last part of it, the last part of the way of Jesus, which is, on the third day, be raised. For us, that raising happens when we come face to face with those who have been shamed, when we enter into relationship with those who are despised. But the truth of the matter is,
In order to do that, we, like Jesus' disciples, need to have a model. We need someone that we can follow. Jesus is inviting himself to be that one. We need people who know how to do that, to follow him. So I think about Walter Weathers, who was a parishioner in my former church, and he had must have had great mentors himself, because he simply understood the cross, and he understood what it meant to go to people who are suffering. The story I'm going to tell you is about at a homeless shelter, but Walter Weathers was also the one who recruited me to be the chaplain at a hospice house for men dying of AIDS in the early 90s, which is about as close to shame, as close to the crucifixion in terms of shame as I can imagine. But on the evening that I'm talking about, we're in the homeless shelter. Our church had prepared a good home-cooked meal, which we did once a month, brought it to the homeless shelter, and set up to serve. And we set it up cafeteria style. So the people who were serving, the church people, were behind the table, and the folks from the food, from the homeless shelter, would walk across, and we would serve them their plates. And then when everybody was served, then the church people would start breaking down the food and cleaning up the kitchen and getting ready to go home. Except not this night. This night, Walter Weathers went through the line himself. He got two plates full of food. And then he came to me and he said, "Pastor," handing me a plate, "let's go eat with some of the guys." And so we came around the tables and walked out to sit and have dinner with some of the homeless guys. There was a table that had a couple of chairs. There was a few guys there. We walked up and Walter said, "Mind if we sit with you?" And they looked at us as if we each had two heads. But we are in the South, North Carolina, and Southern hospitality dictated that they allow us to sit down. And so even though we were aliens with two heads, they said, "Sure, sit down." We sat down, and introductions all around, some awkward conversation at first, and then things got a little more loose, and then things got a little more deep. And then we entered into some real good, solid conversation. People telling us how they had arrived to be at the homeless shelter, about family that they missed, about regrets that they had, about ways they would like to make amends. It was a beautiful, rich conversation. And when the dinner was over, one of the guys looked up as we were clearing the plate and said, "You know, when you two came out here, I saw your collar." He's talking to me. And he said, "I knew you were just coming out here to make me feel worse than I already did about myself. But you didn't do that. Thanks for listening to me. Thanks for talking. Thanks for seeing me." And the other guys around the table nodded their head. And all I can say is thank God for Walter Weathers. Thank God for someone who can actually take me by the hand and lead me to the place that Jesus is calling me to go, that Jesus is calling the church to go. So, my questions, though, were, what does it mean that people from the church kept their distance from people at the homeless shelter whom they were serving? What does it mean that these homeless guys expected church people to shame them, to make them feel worse than they already did? I think that the answer to those questions is the same. That we, even though we have been called by the one who takes up his cross and goes and calls us to follow, we act as though the horror and the power of shame is contagious. If we get too close to someone whom the larger culture sees as a failure, or one who should be ashamed of themselves in our opinion, that our unconscious response is to recoil, is to join the larger crowd, the larger culture, and actually heaping shame on them as well, or to simply draw away. The way of Jesus is to go right to the heart of shame, however, and by doing so, putting shame to flight. Shame can only survive when it is isolated, when it is alone. But Jesus knows that, and so Jesus goes and makes company, breaks bread with those who are ashamed and outcast and despised, and puts shame to flight by accompanying those who are ashamed. This is one of the ways in which we can understand Jesus saying, on the third day be raised. Yes, he enters into the shame. He enters into the suffering. He enters into the rejection. And on the third day is raised. And calls us also into the life of being raised from the dead of shame. When he calls us to pick up our cross and follow, he is calling us, after all, to set free those who are ashamed, caught in such suffering. And he is calling us also to be set free ourselves, so that we do not have to fear shame. We do not have to avoid it in others. We do not have to make people feel more ashamed so that we can feel less close to that shame. Shame has no more power when you have died and been raised from the dead. Now, shame is a powerful, and it is a very insidious power, feeling, spirit. We are not called to shame. We are called to freedom. We are called to be with those so that the isolation of shame can be no more. That is the call of the people of God, to pick up our cross, to walk like Jesus, like Walter Weathers, and to enter in, to accompany, and for all of us to be set free. The way of the cross is freedom. Amen.